Well, your great Aunt Clara was the only one of her siblings to not get out of Germany ahead of the Nazis' total takeover. So that's in your family. How did you come to the idea that you were going to turn this story into a novel?
I grew up with stories of the Holocaust that were really different from the other kids and the other families in the Jewish community that I grew up in that my family did not hate all Germans. I had an aunt who lived in Germany who survived the Holocaust and didn't leave when she was liberated. I met her when I was four, and I fell in love with her immediately. She was a charming and wonderful and gracious person, but her life was a mystery. I couldn't figure out why didn't she leave when the rest of us were in the United States and in Belgium and in England, and I didn't understand it. We visited her. As soon as I started traveling to Europe, we never went without stopping one side or the other of wherever else we were going to visit her. So I came to know her, and I came to know the priest that she created this life with.
And this is the thing. We'll give everybody a sense. So she lives through the Holocaust. We're going to talk about the details. She is deported to Theresienstadt, which was a labor camp, concentration camp. But then after the war,
she didn't leave. She stayed and went to live secretly as a Jew with a Catholic priest for the remaining 40 years of her life.
She made a home and she was his housekeeper.
She was his housekeeper. There is that role in mm-hmm. Germany of a respectable woman caring for and taking care of a Catholic priest.
And that's not unknown here in the States or other countries. Absolutely. Yes.
Exactly. And she was a brilliant woman. She was witty. They both were. And in writing her story, I came to understand my own relationship to my family's history in Germany and to the Holocaust. And I was inspired by her. And it was that inspiration, both of from my aunt and from the priest, that caused me to write this book.
And his name is Ansel.
Yes.
All right, you begin your story in 1913, and Clara is a teenager. And even in those very early pages, we get the sense that even before the First World War, anti-Semitism was creeping into everyday life in Germany?
Yes, it did. It was part of life, and it was an accepted part of life. And it was – German Jews, like my family, were very assimilated. They were allowed to own property. They were allowed to hold professional jobs.
They fought in World War I for Germany?
They did. Yeah. Both my grandfathers were very proud of their military service. They were very devoted Germans and Jews. And this was a situation that was not uncommon. So it was interesting to me that alongside that patriotism and that assimilation, there was a chronic sense also that the anti-Semitism was there, and it was a part of their everyday lives.
Well, we're right there. You take us right there with Clara as she marries. She has two sons, and Germany becomes more and more dangerous for Jews like Clara and her husband. And I'm watching it as she gets her two sons out. She has one go to England and one go to Palestine. But why couldn't she get herself and her husband out? Even her siblings got out.
She would not leave her husband, who had been gassed in World War I and was ill. And if you were ill, you could not get a visa to leave the country. You couldn't be admitted to the United States. Mm-hmm. And her mother, who was elderly, did not feel like she could make that move. She could not leave with my grandfather, even though he begged her to do that. So she would not leave her mother, my great-grandmother, and she would not leave her husband.
So there they faced what was happening. And as we read your novel, you can really feel the noose tightening around Clara and the other Jews in her world step by step, and then the bloodletting begins. I'm wondering if you read us an excerpt from your book, and this comes from May 1933, and Clara is on an errand in the city of Herde. I wonder if you'll read for us.
Sure. The morning housework finished, Clara had dressed and made her way into the town center. Now, as she approached the stationery shop, which she had not entered since the night of the emigration meeting, her thoughts returned to all she had heard and done in the weeks since. Ernst had written her back by return post. No, he did not think Palestine was the answer. Yes, he shared her concern at the worsening conditions, but did not feel the need to leave. He still believed that the rule of law would prevail and the country would right itself. Clara was not comforted. She had nearly reached the door to the small shop when it flew open and a man's body hurtled onto the street, followed swiftly by another. Clara immediately recognized the smaller man as the stationer himself. He was bent over on his knees and his coat was half torn from his body. As he raised his head, Clara saw blood oozing from his disheveled hair. No sooner had he started to stand when three brown-shirted stormtroopers burst from the shop, shouting. They began to savagely beat the two men with clubs, and as one tried to regain his feet, a trooper kicked his legs out from under him and continued the beating. The man fell heavily toward Clara, who had backed into the doorway of the shop next door. Clara looked wildly from the body, which now blocked the sidewalk in front of her, to the troopers still shouting in staccato bursts, "Communist! Filthy Jew! We show you what good Germans will do!" Clara felt the blood rush from her head. She stared at the man at her feet, his one eye bloodied and shut, his other eye wide with panic. A trooper shouted at her, "Don't touch him!" Clara hardly knew that she had bent toward the beaten man. "He is a filthy Jew communist," the trooper said, and eyeing her honey blonde hair and smart dress, "You are a good German. Leave him."
That is Ann Arbor writer Barbara Stark Nieman reading from her debut novel, Even in Darkness. It's the true story of her great aunt Clara Kohler and her triumph over Nazism. Why a novel to tell her story and not a biography?
I struggled with that, Cynthia. I thought at first I'd write a biography or a memoir. Mm-hmm. And I knew her well. I'd interviewed her. I'd interviewed the priest. I had this just boxes full of documents and letters that I'd translated and research that I'd done. But there were certain things I could not know and would not ask her out of respect for her and what she'd gone through. And I'm a reader and a fiction writer, and I love a novel's ability to transport us immediately. None of this, one can only imagine mm-hmm. that. I wanted the reader to be in the story. And for those reasons, I decided to write it as a novel. Plus, it was the number one item on my bucket list.
Was to write a novel. You did a beautiful one. You have us right there inside of it. And so we're watching the curtains opening on what becomes the Holocaust. And we do now understand, because of the way you describe Clara and her family, why people chose to say, no, it can't get any worse. It can't get any worse. And then it does. So Clara, her husband, and her mother are deported to Theresienstadt. How in the world did they all manage to survive and not be selected to go to Auschwitz or the other death camps? Because mother's elderly, the husband is ill. I couldn't believe that they got out from the other end intact, alive.
My family always had the concept that Clara was lucky. And I do think that luck had something to do with it. What I've learned is that her luck was her unerring capacity to see the glass half full, to find a way to make her life work in situations that certainly would have daunted me beyond the ability to act. And she had prepared herself when she learned that she had to stay in Germany. She'd prepared herself and became a massage therapist. And I'm fairly certain that her role as a massage therapist and the relationship that she developed with the commandant as a result of that,
Who had headaches.
Yes. Was part of what saved her. They were on the transport list more than once, and she managed to get them off. So it's a combination of luck and her capacity to figure out a way to make her life work that I think is the explanation. It's the only explanation that I can understand. The guy in the sky was looking out for all those people.
How hard was it as you did your research? And you spent, what, some 15 years researching, apart from the fact that a lifetime of talking to your great aunt. How hard was it, especially to put yourself right there in the concentration camp in order to bring us, your readers, there?
Well, I had these letters. I had the letters that my great-grandmother wrote on a bread wrapper. That was the only paper she had, and in tiny, nearly indecipherable script, she wrote letters about her life there. And somehow Clara managed to save those letters. They were never sent. The letters were intended for my great-grandmother's children. Clara was with her, but she had three other children, including my grandfather and two daughters. And she wrote these letters as a testimony to her love for them and her desire for them to know that they were her life and that they were meant everything to her. But she also described where they lived. She described what happened to them. And I was able to translate those letters. And so I knew a lot.
But emotionally, what did that do for you to kind of get a sense of what it was like to be in the middle of that?
Well, I went there. Mm-hmm. I went to Theresienstadt three times. One time I went and toured it, and then I'd made arrangements to work in the archives, and I found all the information about all the different family members. I had a number of family members, mm-hmm. aside from Clara, who were in Theresienstadt. So I found that information, and they have done a beautiful job of recreating rooms and streets. My mother's entire family went to Theresienstadt. My mother, my father, my sisters and brothers, all the grandchildren. And when we went there, there's a museum. And in the museum is an exhibit of art that was created by the people who were interned in Theresienstadt. Beautiful paintings, drawings. And on the wall, my brother and I approached a wall, and there was a picture of Clara with her kerchief, her star, and her ugly uniform that she wore. And this is when she was working in the laundry. And there's no question that it was her. And that was a stunning moment, because there she was, right there on the wall, with all of what we'd seen. It just brought it alive. And then she spoke about it to me, not in great detail, but enough so that I got a living sense from her of the emotion and the trauma of those times.
And then after the war, she goes to be the housekeeper for her good friend's son. That's how they came to find each other in life, and really was a mom to him in a way that his own mom really wasn't, or stepmom.
Well, yeah. His mom died when he was four. And the woman that became his stepmother was a very close friend mm-hmm. of Clara's. And she did her best.
Yes.
But she walked into a pre-war family with five children. He alone, Ansel alone, was sent off to an orphanage to live with an aunt of his who was a nun there. And he did meet Clara during mm-hmm. his childhood. And then later, his stepmother sent him to find Clara and help her. This was before she was put into the concentration camp. And then again, his stepmother said, find her and help her, when she was liberated and was in a displaced persons camp.
And he did. And it really is a beautiful illustration, as she, as you said, she's like a closet Jew. I mean, people in the parish didn't know, and she was that nice older lady that was his housekeeper. And she'd be sitting in the pews at church while he said Mass. And it does show how boundaries are very fluid, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They were part mother-son. Mm-hmm. She'd lost her children. He'd lost his mother. They were part intellectual sparring partners, but they were really soulmates. Mm-hmm. That is what was established early on in their relationship and stayed that way until the day she died at 100.
Is he still alive?
He is.
Father Ansel is still alive. Well, you spent more than three decades as a speech and language pathologist, and now you have this new role. You've checked it off the bucket list. You wrote a novel. It's a beautiful novel. How does it feel to be a writer, to say, I am a writer?
I love it. I'm enjoying it. I had a wonderful career, one that I felt I was good at and that I really understood what it was that I contributed. And it's a gift to be feeling that again.
Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful book, Barbara Stark Niemann's debut novel, Even in Darkness. Thank you so much for being with us and for sharing Clara's Holocaust survival story with us.
Thank you so much, Cynthia.